say an appeal to you. Please, as much as you're very strict with us with time, please be strict with the candidates. Please, Chair. You shall put us, but
no, but you know what I posted earlier? Members, if a person is on or is not responding to what you ask,
yeah,
also a member could assist to the candidate, yeah, because you know exactly what you want.
Yeah. So the thing is, what happens is that I end up saying, please stop, and it looks rude, you know? So
if it comes from you,
it's proper, because I don't want to say, Temungos, please, you're talking too much now. Please, can you get to the point? I didn't ask all of that.
And then these ones who are coming.
And then me.
No, but
then it's gonna be like being rude. But if it's you as chair and you say, Temungos, I think, please, can you tighten it? Yeah.
But then you see, chair. Now my approach, for example, I'm taking about a minute and a half to ask all my questions and leave about 3.5 or 4 minutes or so to the candidate. It's up to the chairperson and board to make sure that that candidate manages the time in such a way that all those questions are responded to within the 4 minutes that is left. So if you must state it right up front that you and the panel member have got 6 minutes, for example. So if you see that that person is going beyond 4 minutes, you must state it up front. If she does not manage it well, it's unfortunate, it's not up.
I want to disagree. Chair, we're fine, man. Let's go on. Just be mindful of time, but okay, we're doing okay. You know, because, you know, I suspect that if these people don't feel like they're ventilated, they won't understand our decision. You know? The chairperson's recommendation is the best.
And time management is part of leadership. We're also testing them on time management.
Exactly. So
part of leadership.
But the chairperson is steady. You, as a person that is in session interviewing, manage your time with the person. Just don't be rude.
I
agree with that approach.
No, Chair, we are fine.
I agree with that approach. But the other approach
we discussed
might be seen as if maybe the chairperson is protecting the person from questioning or is suppressing as the chairperson. So when I, as the person that is interviewing, you must manage your time with without looking rude.
If you can just upfront say, listen, you have 5 minutes with each candidate. In that 5 minutes, please make sure you say the important things you need to say, otherwise you'll be at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
No, but you haven't said it. You just been saying, please be, you've been nice to them. You're too strict. To ask you like, hey, member, your time. You must say, Chair, you have 5 minutes. In those 5 minutes, you must answer your question. If you don't, you'll be at a disadvantage. So, now, stand, Junior. Yes, we are in
public. Listen, also, honourable members, the Broadcasting Amendment Bill was withdrawn in September. Yeah, so maybe we must be clear then that much as it has been withdrawn, there were issues.
Yeah, I mean, if you apply for the SABC board, you must know what's going on.
No,
what legislation was there,
and
whatever.
Not the amendment bill, maybe the original one. Surely they must have read.
The amendment bill was a huge controversy. Mm-hmm. If you're trying for the amendment bill, you should know.
They should
know.
Okay. We are now inviting the next candidate, Honorable Members.
Please, let's do that.
But Honorable Van Dijk and Honorable Singh, it's true, you have been managing your time very well. Honorable Van Dijk, you and Honorable Singh, you have been managing time very well.
Amanda Jefferson. Pumzile is the worst.
I'm the best. I think you're the worst.
No, she's the best.
The
no
best.
Way. She's the best in wasting time. Thank you.
Introduce honorable members first to you. I'm sure most of them or all of them will know who you are. On my right, Honorable Kalako. Next to Honorable Kalako is Honorable Sidi. Next to Honorable Sidi is Honorable Kaba.
Good day. Thank you.
Next to Honorable Kaba is Honorable Machova. Next to Honorable Machova is Honorable Josie. Honorable Josie.
Yes,
How you doing, man? Yeah. You good? Give water?
Next to Honorable Josie is Honorable Van Dijk. Next to Honorable Van Dijk is Honorable Van Dam. Thank you very much for availing yourself to appear before the panel. While panel members are sorting their questions out, I would hope the most important thing to discuss is that we've asked members of the panel to really come up with pointed questions which allow the candidate to zoom in and talk to those directly. I personally don't like interrupting candidates all the time. We hope it's going to be managed very well. We've been repeating this with each and every candidate. So we hope it's going to work very well. But while honorable members are still preparing their questions, I just want to put to you to briefly introduce yourselves to them in terms of either work or educational experience, whatever you think you are likely to bring to the board.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I am a clinical psychologist by training, but I have been a few other things in my life. I am currently the president of the Pan-African Psychology Union, and I'm chairperson of the Freedom and Responsibility in Science Committee for the International Science Council, which represents both natural, physical, mathematics and social sciences. I live in Johannesburg, and I've done varied things in my existence, and I think I offer the board the range of experience and skills that I have accumulated from my youth, when I was involved in the struggle against apartheid from 1966, through to a variety of interactions, including the cultural performing arts sectors and various other arenas. I currently don't have any involvement in any institution or company that has any business with the corporation that I'm aware of. And I'm going to pause there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cooper. Honorable members, the table here says nobody has indicated. Honorable Ted, are you ready with your question? The high table here advises me to allow you to continue with your introduction, especially in relation to broadcasting and media in general.
Press the button. I'll back off a little bit and say I have been a teacher from the time I got kicked out of University College for Indians in Salisbury Island, and ended up becoming the last Vice Chancellor at the University of Durban Westville. My involvement in the performing arts arose during my teenage years and would probably have continued had it not been for that expulsion when I was then forced to pursue law, which ended when I was convicted after the Viva Frelimo rallies and sentenced to a period of imprisonment in Robben Island, when I decided to pursue a more professional and the career that I currently hold. I have been involved in producing certain content for the public broadcaster in my previous life, and I think one of the shows, Behind the Mask, is currently or has been on Encore over time.
Professor Cooper, morning. I'm going through your CV here. I'm battling to see if you have any background in the big ICT or communication sector, the experience. I can't see it. So I'm forced to go straight into the contribution that you can bring if appointed a board member. And I want to start with I'm going to raise quite a number of questions, and I would appreciate if you can respond to them very briefly, straight to the point. And I must indicate upfront, time management to us is part of leadership. We're also going to be testing as to how do you manage time. I'll appreciate if you can respond to my question, at least within 5 minutes, if possible. The first one is there are always tensions between the board and the shareholder, as and when the shareholder intervenes, realizing that the board seems to be deviating from the mandate. We often see tensions, disputes. In some instances, they even land in court. In your understanding, why do you think causes these tensions? The second one is the role of the executive directors in the board. I'm sure you're aware that in the board, beside the non-directors, you also have your group CEO, yeah, the three. But there are those who are like suggesting that we might have to review the role of the three in the board. What's your take on that one? The role of community radio. You can just talk to that one as well. What is it that community radios can do in terms of community development? Are they getting the necessary support, be it from government, SABC, MDDA, or any other person is supposed to be supporting them? And lastly, the role of tertiary institutions to assist the SABC in executing that educating role of the SABC. Thanks.
Thanks very much. It is probably expected that there will be tension between the representative of government, who is the minister, and the board from time to time. But it is in how one mediates that. There can be serious contradictions to deal with, or, like has happened in the recent past, the broadcaster going seriously into the red. It is always wise to enjoin the minister in the planning of major approaches to resolving the issue. Very specifically, the Act provides for certain kinds of roles, but also one of the downfalls, and I may as well say it here now, one of the downfalls is that the SABC is open season in terms of that Act, whereas it is the public broadcaster, is open season to all sorts of transparency, particularly that can be immediately relayed to competitors and so on. And I think in the period where we've had the growth in private entities out there, this has been one of the drawbacks. I look at this as not just an SOE. Unlike any other institution in the country, this is the public broadcaster called upon to play very, very specific roles in building, in nurturing a nation that is struggling to be born. And for it merely to be looked at as another, even SAA, even though it's a national carrier, is totally wrong, because very few national entities are relied upon by the mass of people as the public broadcaster is for their news, entertainment, etc. So I think mediation is important. The role of the executive directors, I think it is commonplace for at least the CEO to be an ex officio or a direct member of a board. Given the Enron and other debacles that have happened over time, separations have become necessary. However, one of the issues is that certain positions are almost required in terms of the Act, so you have to appoint X and Y and Z. CEO is clear. CFO is clear. COO, I don't know about personally, because you have operational heads of the various other entities. So I'm open to a difference on that one. The role of community radio, I think that when we opened the airways after the Broadcasting Act came into being, we did not provide the necessary support, and we clearly did not engender the broadcaster to play that kind of role with its little brothers and sisters out there, having the immense skills that the broadcaster does have. It has been a training ground for new entrants who have now tended to dominate the field, and there's no reason why some kind of apprenticeship model, some kind of learnerships should not be engendered. I think that with tertiary education institutions, very few sectors, honorable member, in our society are stable. And that's true also for the tertiary higher education sector. And unfortunately, because some of our institutions turn their backs on certain areas, private training institutions have bubbled up. If you go to Auckland Park, you'll see a plethora of little backyard and front yard operations purporting to offer varied kinds of certifications and training, and they don't come cheap. So the immediate institutions in that vicinity have lost ground to these private entities that have tended to charge straight commercial rates, whereas I think that UJ, WITS and the other institutions throughout the country, and I'm only locating it now because the headquarters is in Auckland Park, the other institutions ought to talk about how to get journalism, performing arts, and various other aspects of what the broadcaster needs as part of their offering. It makes eminent sense.
Thanks. Four questions. The two of us, we took only 6 minutes.
Thank you very much. I hope other honorable members will follow suit.
Thanks. Thanks, Prof. Cooper. We have 5 minutes. Part of what we do when conducting interviews, beyond looking at your CV, we conduct background research. So you're a director of the Zulake Bowling Club, am I correct? Now, there was a controversy that the tender for that contract was awarded unfairly. The process was not transparent. Can you just briefly give us details around that?
Yes, this was the allegation by the previous tenants who actually had almost a colonial hold on that premises and weren't willing to let go. It was and so they raised all sorts of issues in court, and even when the city of Johannesburg cowed on the matter, I decided to pursue it myself, and the full bench of the South Gauteng High Court found in a devastating judgment, which I can make available, that there was nothing irregular and we were prevented from entering that space merely on the heritage of white-clothed English, old English men and women bending their knees.
Right. Thank you for clearing that up. I'm glad that it was sorted out in court so the matter can be laid to rest. A second issue is during your tenure as VC at UDW, you were investigated for 11 issues on governance at the university, and the reports portrayed you as manipulative and prone to surrounding yourself with acolytes. Now, that is exactly what we do not need on the SABC board. Anyone is manipulative and forms factions and surrounds themselves with acolytes. So I'd like your clarification, like you clarified the Zulake issue, whether this report was ever taken on review, and what's the stance on the contents of that report.
Okay, this was at the height of mergers in the university sector, and that institution right now is one of those unhappy institutions, largely because of the environments that were constrained to form into one. My brief was very specific.
Can you just limit it to the report? Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. You've got very limited time. I'd just like you to provide me information on whether the minister's report, which found you as manipulative and surrounding yourself with acolytes, did you ever challenge that report? Was it taken on judicial review? Where does the issue stand now? If you could just focus just on that.
When that review came out, it was towards the end of my tenure, and that was a year which was reduced because of the interference of others, and in any event, the minister decided to back off, and nothing happened, because if he listened to that review, he would have had me removed, and nothing happened.
So the report
we decided not to take it on review because the minister decided not to rely on the report. It's unfortunate for me because it stands out there, but if anybody raises that, especially the authors of that, the DG at the time said I was entitled to sue them, which I decided not to bother with.
Why didn't you? Because here you are, years later, it's in 2003, it's 2019,
mm-hmm.
This is following you now. I mean, you should have cleared your name, because now, for me, this is a major red flag. Like, he challenged the Zulek issue because you felt you were in the right and that was settled. You should have done the same here.
You see, there's a very big difference, honorable member, between dealing with your own entity and dealing with a council which has a variety of people and who feel let well alone. But, you know, you can go to the chair of council and a few other people to find out exactly, and those records are there. We decided just to move on, and I decided not to pursue it. Of course, it does, it's out there, but it also frees me to, when I complete my memoirs, put the record straight. And I'm not so interested in that kind of comment, which clearly at the time...
I am.
Yes.
I am interested to know whether you are that person.
I am not that person, because if I were, that would have followed me, that would have been there before and subsequently.
It's still here, you didn't challenge it. Anyway, my time's up now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Van Dam. The next candidate in my list is Honorable Clark.
Yes, no, it's fine, Chair. Norman, I see in your CV you have done many presentations and invited research and so on. So that sounds interesting and close to policy making as well. But I don't know if you know of a broadcasting bill, but also an input into policy improvement, especially on the, do you think 90-10 content is okay or 70-30? What could be of you for the local content into SABC? Maybe you will note my questions and then we'll proceed as does. One other role of the SABC is education and entertaining. But strongly, how do you feel about community development? Do you think SABC is doing enough? What can be done? And then three would be that on the issue of the digital migration, once you are appointed the member of the board, we are slow into that. How would you assist in speeding it up? Ahead of us or with us already, it's the issue of the fourth industrial revolution. We may not be on par on it, but you sound IT and clinical and all that. I know there are elements that goes to health and the clinical issues, but then with regard to SABC, what could be your input? Lastly, the SABC is a public broadcaster. You also have alluded to the importance of nation building. How could it tell the success, or it tells the history of our country? We are 25 years now, and the people need to know their legacy and the detail, you know, the importance of what good from Mandela. You were once arrested and so on. I think to be educating to our nation, how could we do that best? What could be your advice? Thank you.
The issue of local content is vital because some of our languages, while they spill over into neighboring countries, some of them are fairly specific to our country. And the music and other product, cultural product, is fairly unique. instance, is isiZulu, isiXhosa, and let's see, Zindebele, Venda, fairly specific to our country, whereas many of the others are spoken in neighboring countries. So we need to ensure that those are given the pride of place that they deserve. And therefore, I think local content is quite important. We need to get to a place rather than doing something quite drastic and finding that our content comes short, because listenership and viewership can easily migrate. In particular here, it's listenership because of radio and the music that gets put out. So I'm a firm believer in as much local content, that we should be building on that, because that's our goal, if you like, as a country, and also as the public broadcaster. We ought to be hiring out that content to other providers rather than allowing them to take it from us. The education and entertainment areas are critical, because the majority of South Africans rely on at least one or two radio stations. Yeah, we are fine.
Education,
okay.
And entertainment.
Community development. I think that the SABC has tried, but there's a lot more that has to be done. And particularly in the wake of the massive kinds of outpourings that we get from communities, particularly urban and peri-urban in our country, understanding their issues. Whereas, and I know this for a fact, because communities, in terms of the institutions I'm associated with, when there's a protest, the reporter asks, are you going to burn? If they say no, then there's no coverage of it. However, underlying that is a need for affirmation and to benefit from the technology, the vast technology and strengths of the SABC in mediating their issues, in enabling them to be better at what they're doing. If it is mere cleanup campaigns to entrepreneurship and to better advice for their children, how to bring up children in this environment, all the issues that social media gets full of, whereas the sound voice that comes through from a radio station with credible experts from television as well could help in that process. So I believe that community development ought to be flagged, and there needs to be relevant departmental and other institutional PBO and NGOs involvement in that process. Digital migration is overdue. The longer we take, the worse off we will be, even though the costs are coming down in some respects, but the backlog has to be dealt with quite effectively. So, for instance, when the SABC flights a high-density program, it doesn't have the ability to store it because it needs to go back into analog. So the license expires, they need to recontract certain content. And whether we like it or not, the revolution industrially and technologically in terms of convergence is happening, and the SABC ought to be at the forefront as it was previously in making this happen. I think that there's been a lot said, and I don't know what the merits are about some of the offerings, but that will be something that the new board would have to investigate and make sure it reaches a conclusion on sooner than later. Nation building ties in again with community building development, but it is more important in that, I said earlier, we're a nation trying to be born. And that we see on social media and various other places, we see outpourings of a dangerous retrogressive nature. We see claims and counterclaims. We see so much fake information out there that we need to have a broadcaster that puts out fact. And at this stage, I must say,
And I'm not saying it here because I'm interviewing for this position, but I get most of my news from SABC. SAFM, if I'm traveling, or a local station, or I tune between one or the other of the free-to-air stations, because that's where most information is available. And the expertise that's available in the SABC is tremendous. If we were to channel them into better racial harmony and other issues that confront us, dealing with issues of poverty where the clear crass materialism that's put out there with certain celebrities is something that is far away from the gross majority of our people, we need to be able to bridge those kinds of gaps. We need to create better understandings, and we need to go with creating common visions for our people, where people can be together as human beings without being labeled or being consigned to some category or the other, which we are still wont to do, unfortunately, 25 years into our democracy.
Thank you very much. Honorable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome. My first question, with your introduction, why was it important for you to mention that you were an anti-apartheid activist? And the reason why I asked this is in 2003 in the media, it said that you were installed amidst much fanfare implicating your struggle credentials were viewed by some as a trump card. What is your response on that? When you landed the job with the university, the media reflected on that and they said that you used that you were anti-apartheid activist to land the job. So what is your response on that? Because why was it for you, what important for you to mention that?
Okay. I'm 68 years old. In 1966, when Verfoed declared a republic, my opposition began, because we, after Nazi Germany, confronted the worst horror and racism that we still, 25 years into democracy, have to confront. And the kind of question you're asking me, I have to justify that, and I don't wish to justify my existence. If I had to do it over again, I would, and with more fervor. The pity is that we were too liberal and allowed certain things to happen where people feel the entitlements like anti-apartheid. It is a crime, deemed a crime, and the sooner all of us accept that, we'll move on together. Otherwise, we'll still hearken back, and the kind of image portrayed that there's a DNA of corruption and ineptitude that black people have, which is farthest from the truth, as if everything that is eminent and good came from the past. And we are still struggling with the structural and, dare I say, psychological and physical residue of that system. Our government has been very kind to create the reconciliation that Mandela brought in. But we need now to move beyond that, to create a nation. And all little ethnic groups who struggle with that need to come to terms with the fact that this is a country on the southern tip of the African continent. We're not somewhere in Asia or Europe, and we need to fall in line with the needs of our country. And that, I think, is underpinned by our constitution and the act for which the SABC bears the brunt of broadcasting accountability.
Thank you. My second question, there was a lot of unhappiness over your appointment to the Professional Board of Psychology of Health Professions Council of South Africa in 2004. Some of the leading psychologists were very enraged, and also in the media it was said that there was a failure that you weren't elected democratically. Why and how did you land the position? Was it a political appointment?
You know, I was the first black person to be elected into the profession of psychology's regulatory board. I'm sorry, ma'am, I don't know why this is. Regulatory. No. I assume that would be.
That's
the
time you wake up. That's the wake up bell.
This is the time I was supposed to go
to
back
wake up.
To get to my pickup for the flight. You disturb my train of thought now.
No, your phone did, not me.
Your question, honourable member, again?
Psychology.
I was the first black person to head that. It was the profession is still, unfortunately, 70% dominated by whites. So effectively, I failed to do the transformation that I wanted and that we tried to regulate in 2000. There was a hue and cry by certain old white and specifically Afrikaans groups that mounted a campaign. And the next, there wasn't another election after that. After that, it was appointments and a partial election. And I was appointed by the then minister. And the problems that that board has still reside from persons claiming privilege halting progress. And that profession, sadly, is halted by the narrow whiteism of the past. We need to, you know, how do we have in a country where 90% of the population is black and very significantly African, have a minority serving the needs of that population? It just doesn't work. And I'm not talking about a proportional kind of representation. I'm just talking about being seen to be available to cater for the majority of people out there.
My last question, you understand that it's important for me to ask these questions because political interference has been a huge problem in the SADC, and we need people there with backbone that won't allow that. And also, it doesn't matter if a person is white or black, it's about competency. So are you such a person that won't allow for political interference? With that question, my last note, do you have any government contracts?
No government contracts.
Okay.
Never did. Let me just say, anybody who knows me knows that I actually will not be put in a position of being dominated by anybody. I've known all the presidents that we've had from de Klerk upwards, and none of them have been available to put any pressure on me, and the same with any minister that may have been overseeing any particular ministry where I had to play a role in. So I hold my own, and frankly, I enjoy that space. I will not be a political pawn for anybody. Yes, I've played a political role in the anti-apartheid era, but once democracy came, I am a non-card-carrying member of any political party. But I must say, given the balance of where things are, the majority of my colleagues, comrades and friends come from the ruling party and the former segments of the liberation movement.
Okay, just one. I know it's not me. What is the name of that board you are appointed?
It's the health. It's the Professional Board for Psychology, and it belongs in the Health Professions Council, where I went after that to become the first black vice president, and who was not a medical or dental practitioner.
Before I go to the other members who are on the line, I wanted to follow up on what Honorable Van Dijk just said. With your activism within the profession, psychology, health, mental health, and general success, as you have been president nationally in Africa and do you think as South Africans we have really been able, or there's a role to use our social scientists effectively to help us deal with critical nation-building related issues, social transformation-related issues, which are big issues, and they're holding us back in this country not to move forward. If there's a possibility, what do you think a structure like the SABC ought to do to utilize them effectively?
Chair, I think that a country that denies the reality of the socio-political economic environment and hence its people's thinking and context is a country doomed to failure. We cannot simply rely on economics, whether we want to call it behavioral economics or certain other technicist areas alone. We need to get interpreters of the human condition involved. And heaven knows, our country is replete with excellent people who publish widely, who are accepted internationally in all spheres, but at home, they get nary a recognition or reliance. Instead, consultants are brought in and their junior students end up performing certain roles. I think many of our key academics and experts, not only in social sciences but across the board, will be only too pleased for a call to play roles at a local, regional, or national level, as they do elsewhere, and the SABC can be an immense facilitator of that. I know that when reporters call me, not only from SABC, but various print and electronic media, and I refer them to other colleagues or give them background information, but I'm very quick to say, I don't have expertise in that area. Ask so-and-so who's more important in that area. And that, I think, is what we lack. We lack that ability to use existing excellence. We've got excellent people out there, and we are denying them a role to play. And they will be lost to the public. They will end up in their consultancies and in their small jobs or other roles that they play. So we can, as the public broadcaster, play a hugely facilitative role and also create panels of experts that can look at problems in a way that it becomes publicly viewed, a think tank that is ongoing with new faces, bright, young, and other faces that can deal with the problem, rather than leaving it to closed shop entities who are not publicly accessible.
Thank you very much. It's a big issue for me, the question of content development for this country. Thank you very much for that. Honorable Ndlozi?
Yes, thanks. Well, I want to go back to you, DW. I understand the difficulty of post-apartheid education landscape, Kada Asmal's efforts to bring hostile universities to form single institutions, maybe majority of which have those experiences have failed. But two things in that position when you were a leader there. One relates to the resignation of Professor Pidi Ganduli. The replacement in the letter that was written by the SRC, in a statement that the SRC released, accused you of having mistreated him, and secondly, made his replacement without due process. The person that replaced the position of Dean of Students thereafter, after he resigned. There was no due process. One, two, it was like few days after Pidi Ganduli left, there was no advert, nothing.
and even at the time, majority of the academics, particularly black academics, experienced you as dictatorial, not accepting criticism, shutting down criticism, and that your managerial skills were very bad. What is your reaction to that?
Okay, I'm not going to comment on an entire media unit on the Hill that was responsible for putting out some of these stories. But if you speak to the students and staff at that institution at the time, the picture is very different. And it was reflected in the results. It was reflected in leaving the institution in the black. The SRC statement you're referring to, I'm not quite familiar with, but the SRC and we enjoyed an excellent relationship. There was not a protest on campus. Indeed, there was banner headlines saying I was saved by a Casper. I've never been inside a Casper in all my life. But the banner headlines then screamed I was inside a Casper.
Appointment following Professor Pitikantuli's resignation, the SRC statement says, it was curious. So I agree. They say you had enjoyed the huge student support until that point, because that resignation didn't go down well. But the appointment thereafter, that's what I want to hear about. Was it a duly, the process of appointment, was it duly followed or was it not?
Indeed, all the appointments made in my tenure, because it was a constrained tenure and because it was under merger orders, were very specific. Get the right candidates through advertisement initially for key positions. I entered an institution that had acting everybody. Below me, nobody was permanent. And very specifically, African academics were not affirmed. Okay, and I changed that. There were a few hundred staff complaints, and that turned around. With Pitikantuli, I don't want to say anything here about his relationships with other people and so on, but he felt he couldn't manage and left. And a few months later, got employed elsewhere.
He accused you of making him a black token. So it was not he felt he couldn't manage. That's not true. You're misrepresenting him. He blamed you. Your managerial style and using him as a tokenism. Those were his direct words, and said he couldn't work under those conditions and left. In fact, he says he had resigned, was hoping that in the process he would make a handover. The next day when he arrived in campus, he was told to hand over the keys and leave the university immediately. That is his side of the story. He didn't say, no, I couldn't handle the job. He blamed your leadership.
You see, again, I don't want to get into he said, she said. He's on record as saying that there's a very different version as far as I'm concerned. And immediately after he left, there was an internal advertisement because the time period was very short. We had to close the university in December that year. Time period was very short, and it was filled by an internal candidate through a committee process.
Okay, that's fine. Now, two last aspects I want to tease you on. The profession of the Board of Psychology, you were the 45th, because there's a democratic process, they vote, you were number 40-something. And the claim is that Mando Shabalala Msimanga pushed your CV to undermine a democratic process. And your response is that you were the first black to be appointment. Are you saying there were no other black people on top of your name that had been duly and democratically elected?
There's two boards here. The first board, right, the first board was fully elected. The profession at that time was about 90% white, and I was elected second highest vote. The moment I introduced transformation
and opening the profession up.
Let's talk about this one, Professor.
Then
Professional Board of Psychology.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Exactly what I'm talking about. The next board had elections, and whatever figure is given there is probably correct. But the minister had the opportunity to also nominate candidates, and she nominated me. And that board itself, when it constituted, right? So don't confuse the first board where I was the chair. The second board, I was nominated again to stand for chair, and I declined. Two other persons stood, and the one got elected the chair, a female, Queenie Mokwane, and the vice chair was William.
Prof, I think, let me help you, because I think you are confusing me. Did Mando take you from when you were voted number 40-something and put you in the board? Did that happen?
I was one of Mando's nominees.
Okay, so these facts are correct. The last thing is your response to Legoda. I don't understand here what is going to help me make sense of the political influence. You say, well, firstly, you know, Legoda didn't say the President of the Republic is a spy. He said he sold out because of the question of saying they put ideas in his head, thereby denouncing the liberation ideas. And in the biography, which is written by the biography of Ramaphosa, on two instances, the liberation movement, by the way, investigated Mr. Ramaphosa's league to why, and in 1990, specifically...
Sorry, Honorable Ndlozi.
Sorry, ma'am.
Honorable Kam.
No, I was just saying, Honorable Ndlozi is correct. President Ramaphosa and Mr. Ramaphosa. I think let's refer it to that.
What did you say?
You are saying Ramaphosa.
The correction is?
Mr. or President Ramaphosa.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry.
In fact, in that biography, there is a place where the SACP stops the application to the membership, and then they say we must investigate whether he was working with white people or not. That's why he was never a member of the SACP. But you went in public and said you don't recall any investigations, any claims around or the questionability of Mr. Ramaphosa. Was it an indirect way of trying to play to the gallery so that the caucus here of the ANC can put you in the board? Because you literally gave incorrect facts.
No. But listen to those interviews again. I didn't talk about any investigation. I don't even know what the references you're talking about. What I do know is what I said, and I'll repeat it here very succinctly. I was the first accused in the Sasso BBC trial. Lekota was accused number 3. Lekota at the time had been suspended by the South African Students Organization. He was not in the know about what was going on with the plans to have Frelimo representatives come to this country to hold commemoration rallies. There was a very small group of persons led by Muntu Nyeza as the face and myself. And at the relevant time, Nefolo Votwe was the Sasso president. He knew some of it. And I'm giving you the names so that these are the accused.
You're taking too long.
No, I can't. You know, you're asking for an entire history.
We don't have time. I'm not asking, Professor, I'm not asking for an entire history.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you that entire history.
No, I'm not asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking to a specific claim that you competently went to dismiss. Or you think you're competent to dismiss. The claim is under interrogation. Many people break anyway. Lekota says, under interrogation, the President of the Republic denounced the ideas of the liberation. And even And I'm giving you two instances in the biography where the movement that he belonged to, the ANC in the 80s, but also the SACP, which is the alliance, investigates this matter. But you go to public and then you're trying to defend that position. I'm trying to establish that particular credibility of dismissing Ramaphosa, of dismissing Honorable Legorda's claims. On what ground were you dismissing him, or were you just trying to play to the gallery so that when you come here, the caucus can put you in a board because you defended Mr. Ramaphosa?
Nothing could be further from from the truth. Okay.
Chair.
Let me say that at that point...
Chair, we will have problems if we can continue like this. Because it might be important for Honorable Ndozi to remind the candidate the relevance of the questions to the task at hand now. We're in the interviews. So, because you, quite a number of the issues that you are raising now, that's why he's becoming confused. They are no longer relevant to this interview.
No, so, listen, so, I think Honorable is still on platform.
No,
but we must keep the order as well.
Don't be agitated. I'm willing to take direction from the chair. I want
all
to
us
rule on that.
No, don't rule on anything. Honorable members, I was still listening to Honorable Teddy.
The point I'm making, Chair, is that we have spent about 20 minutes, in my view, on issues that are no longer relevant to the task at hand. We're in the interview, want to check the relevance or the competitiveness of the candidate for the job at hand. So in my view, these issues that he's raising are not relevant.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you still want to respond to this?
Chair,
I will.
We've been interviewing. Everyone's raised...
Point of correction, Chair.
Point of correction, Chair. How anga kulumi?
You have given your time earlier on. I think if Honorable Lose is not... He has finished her time. You must give us a chance, Chair.
Chair, why did you let
please,
me?
Please, Chair. Please. Your attention must not to this honorable.
Chair,
we need your attention.
I was
all of
speaking,
us.
And you
we can't allow
me.
This kind of interviews. We can't.
You recognize?
Can
me,
I make? Yeah. Can I make a comment on this, sir?
Okay. Can I just make a comment? you recognized me and you allowed Honorable Machoba to interrupt me. And I hadn't even started speaking, so I don't know what her point of order was about. So clearly ANC members are touched here about this particular candidate. We have been interviewing all along. Everyone has been thoroughly interrogated. Now, what's the problem? Why suddenly people are rising up as soon as Ramaphosa's name is mentioned? People get very touchy. We've been asking
President Ramaphosa.
We get it. You're a big stan. You've made it clear throughout the interview. We got it. Stop it now. We got it. Chair, my point is, can you please be allowed to ask our questions? And can acolytes allow us to ask our questions, even if they make them uncomfortable?
I wanted to go back to the point raised by Honorable Sid. I've been sitting here really getting uncomfortable. It's an important conversation. I'm sure the whole nation will be interested. But my fear is a robust engagement, which is not really bringing the candidate closer to issues that were core to the advent and our mandate. I have been wanting us to come closer. I
I respect and fully expect our principle that we should be robust and leave no stone untouched, but not at the expense of our real exercise, the task at hand. So I've been worried about that. The table here kept on saying, you know, the debate is going ahead, but in terms of points and ratings, it's not coming closer. And so, honorable members, we have taken a lot of time. We have to find a way of raising issues and bringing them closer. With regard to what is there in the media, it's really good to ask a candidate about that. But remember, there are different sides of the story with what is out there. I don't know whether we'll achieve much if we spend all our time wanting to prove. We don't even have the capacity to get what is the right version. Let's take, for instance, I was listening. I'm writing also. I'm actively involved. The issue of ministerial appointments, it's really not about favors. I know that, how it works. And if a minister has an opportunity to bring his or her own candidate, they don't even look at what was in their process. They will do that independent of anyone, especially in the health sciences. So there are things I've listened to quietly, and I'm sure people who are seeing me, they'll say, but the chair should understand that the minister didn't have to ask for permission from anyone. If it's allowed in the act, then they do it. They have to do it all the time. They don't even check who was there. So what I'm appealing for, honorable members, with the limited time left, we really continue with our hard line, but bring the candidate closer to it, what is critical for today. I suppose
Chair, I accept your direction, and I really do want to insist that
Why don't from the secretariat? How many minutes has it taken so far? Can you remind us? How many minutes has it taken so far?
You are being uncouth now.
I don't want to fight. How many minutes has it taken so far?
I'm told.
I want to fight.
I'm told 2 minutes. 15 minutes.
Yeah. Instead of 5 minutes. Is that fair? To what we agreed upon? Is that fair?
Yep.
Is that how we are going to proceed with this?
But allow the chairperson to chair.
Is that how we are going to proceed with this interview?
Allow the chairperson to chair.
We agreed in the beginning, Chair. A candidate has got 5 minutes to interact with a panel member. Now you are saying he has taken 15 minutes and you still want him to proceed. And as I've indicated, on issues which are completely irrelevant to the task at hand, in my understanding, it's not fair, really. And we are relying on you, Chairperson, really, to give a ruling.
Well, I have made my ruling, but for the sake of the candidate, whatever the candidate was responding to, I think it's fair enough to finish off. If Honorable Dlozi wanted to continue, it's a problem.
I'm not continuing, Chair. Can you see how disciplined I am? I don't want to fight, because the spirit with which we've been doing this has been very indulgent for everyone. I have felt that many instances, people asking irrelevant and misinformed questions. I've kept to my space. I've not interrupted them because I give the candidates the benefit of the doubt to competently deal with questions, including irrelevant questions. It's up to them to say, well, I don't think that applies in this context. And if they're unable to change a perception I have about them, then they know I have a vote of what's going to happen here. So I really am pleading. I don't want to fight. I did explain. The question relating to the president, in my mind, I think Professor Cooper was grandstanding because, and I'm giving him an opportunity to change that perception, to challenge that perception. I find his comments in relation to what Legota said or Honorable Legota said I don't think he's a credible witness. He should have kept to his space. But he came out to defend Mr. Ramaphosa, and I'm saying to him, seeing that you are really irrelevant in that context, why were you doing that? Were you trying to grandstand so that we choose you into the board? That's the relevance of the question. And I'm also testing his political capacity to resist political interference. If he doesn't want to liberate himself from my perception, that's okay. And if you want to protect him as well because you think he's irrelevant, that's okay too, because I'm going to live here with that perception unchallenged. And I'm appealing, Chair. I've sat here and I don't interrupt people. They go 20 minutes, they go. I don't do this. And all I'm appealing is consistency. Comrades must say I'm uncomfortable. Don't say no time. This, I say it's relevant questions. If we're going to do that, I will expose a lot of people here. I'm happy to step out, but I just want to explain that that's a perception I'm living with if the candidate does not correct that.
Yeah.
That's all.
Honorable Hills, I think the feeling is that amongst members, you have taken too much time. More time than any of the members.
I accept that, Chair.
Yeah,
I'm done, yeah.
For the sake of the candidate, because there's still Honorable Galago and Honorable Machoba, who haven't raised anything with the... it's important for you, if you still want to engage on the perspective you gave on the matter, but very brief, because the feeling of the panel is that it has no substantial value to the task at hand.
Okay.
And I will be moving quickly to Honorable Machoba and Honorable Galago.
Let me make it very clear. I was totally unaware, I just very briefly, totally unaware of Lekota's utterances in Parliament, because I was attending the National Religious Summit at the time. And that evening, I got calls from the media saying, you were in that trial, and I gave interviews about my knowledge. But this SABC position was farthest from my mind, and I'd forgotten about it until I got a again through the media. So let me put the record very, very, very clear, because it's important, and I'm not as interested in the SABC position as I'm interested in the fact that as the key accused and being charged with a plethora of charges, what is alleged is not true. The records are all available. I don't know the book you're talking about. I don't know the SACP reference, etc. And frankly, I don't care. I'm only interested in the things I know and I've been involved in. And to that end, and as you correctly said, under the horrors of apartheid detention, Section 6, without access to anybody, incommunicado, very few of you here can imagine that. Were you beaten and tortured? And you can write statement after statement after statement until the security police says, now I'm satisfied with your statement. Many of us wrote multiple statements, and I've very clearly said I'm not aware of that allegation, as I still am not. I know that the president was the chair of the SASO branch at Turf Loop. It was banned on campus. The vice chair was Matthew Sposa. The communication secretary was advocate, I forget her name now. So the point I'm making is most of them weren't aware of the mechanics of what we were doing, including Lekota. So if he has information to the contrary, fine. But I'm only talking about that. And I believe in speaking what I know about, not somebody else's version. And that's why, through some of the controversy, I've chosen to stay out of getting immersed in the gutter. When the trust is there and it's festering, and you want to go and say, no, it was an orange that the pig ate rather than a potato, you will mess yourself and you will stink. And that's why I've stayed away from responding to certain things, because the truth is patent and it's out there. So on this point, no, I'm not aware of that. And if there is anything like that, so be it, but not during my trial.
Thank you very much, Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome, Professor Cooper. I've been going through to your CV, and it's very interesting. You had to play a very essential role in our country. And you, I was just picking up some few things you have done in this country. One of healing the nation with other icon, Father Simangaliso and Dr. Bikian in 2000. And also in 1995, you also assisting in the formulation of certain TRC policy from 1995. That was a good job we have done in this country. Now, my question, just tell this committee and the nation, how would you personally fix the crisis of SSBC to claim back their dignity as you're applying for to be a board in SABC? We have a crisis, we had a crisis there. Even they also, they had to apply the section 189 to retrench the staff. But now we still have that problem. What are you going to assist the SABC to be stable? That's my question, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. I think the SABC has to be salvaged. If the SABC is not salvaged, and there's no country in the world that does not have, no country in the world that worth salt does not have a national broadcaster, including the belly of the capitalist beast in the USA. We would be foolish to scavenge it. It would be more appropriate to look at those. The SABC is divided into different entities. It would be important, one, to take it out of the red, because it has been in the red for many years now. It needs to be a growing concern. One needs to restructure that debt, importantly, together with the relevant minister and the Minister of Finance, work a plan that is viable. In doing that, I'm sure there will be reports to Parliament through this committee. The other is to look at the remedies proffered by predecessors and whether they make sense or not. It's not just merely throwing the baby out of the bathwater. It's looking at the cumulative level of where we're at now and what the crisis really portends and how to turn it around. To get a buy-in from not only the leadership at the SABC, but the entire staff complement. They need to be assured that they're not going to be left on the lurch. Furthermore, to review the structuring of certain contracts that have been made. It's quite ironic that last month, MultiChoice listed, and there's free-to-air stations and television. There's a free carry to MultiChoice into their bouquets. However, I suspect that there's a cost to carry even a delayed sports broadcast. Whereas my own view on that is that that entity has probably benefited from the public broadcaster and the payment of license fees, which have kept the SABC afloat partially. So effectively, that listing would have been done on the sweat of ordinary black people out there, ordinary viewers, television viewers, and then in the main black people. So the television license payers have subsidized it. The advertising content, unusually for a satellite / cable broadcaster, is high. In the world, you don't get that. Here you get that, and that's because there's been a revenue shift to that bouquet as well as to the other private players out there. The SABC has a greater viewership and listenership, and to prove that, you need to look at the viewership figures. 1, 2, and 3 is watched by South Africa, including on the multi-choice bouquet. So it tells us something about the offering. Therefore, it needs to be restructured. Whatever contracts have been engaged into need to be looked at so that we get the best negotiators possible, experts who can up the ante for the SABC, rather than continue the bleeding of the fiscus and TV license holders subsidizing private entities.
Do you think in your personal commitments you will fix the SABC if you were chosen as a board member? You will fix it in utilizing your experience of psychological. Do you think it will be part of fixing SABC?
Ma'am, I need to just say this, that the psychology, I think that's very important. One needs to use that. But I've also, you know, in my other role, I've chaired certain other entities, including ones that have resulted in certain legislative changes. And the one that comes to mind is the Road Accident Fund, which I ended up with accidentally. And at that time, ensured that the first ever VAT payments were made. If you look at an entity, you buy in the right expertise, you can change things. You need to have leadership with a vision and ability to change it. You don't need each kind of expertise that the broadcaster has in that board. You need to be able to oversee them. Exercise fiduciary responsibility, prevent any undue influence, whether from narrow partisan or provider sources, because all of those are lobbying for this piece of cake that has diminished to this extent. So, yes, I will bring those skills to bear. However, at the same time, this is not something that I'm hoping I will end my life on. If the committee feels comfortable that I have a role to play, I will certainly consider playing that role. However, at the same time, like I've vigorously engaged with some of the members here, I will not allow my integrity and my positions to be reduced to being a rubber stamp, a lackey, or somebody called with any other name. It's easy to allege anything. To actually prove it is massively onerous.
Thank you very much, Honorable Galako.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe my questions will be just very few, brief. Precisely because, Prof, I think you are a candidate which is needed. Your integrity and credibility and your combativeness, I think it will help us there. But my question is, are you a team player? Because you'll be part of a collective there. You'll be working with different characters, strong in themselves, where there will be sometimes disagreements. I don't doubt that there's no minister or somebody outside can try to make you a lackey or to make you to influence you. That I don't doubt. I've known you for a long time. And you have proved that even in your various capacities. So to me, the only part which I will want to be assured, to give me a commitment on, will you be able to be a team player there? because we have worked with other collectives, but there are other opinions, some which have been raised here. So, because SABC, part of the problem is exactly that, where you have dominant personalities who tend to dominate over others, not working together as a team. At all levels, sometimes you get that problem around in the officials or executive. But certainly in the board, you'll get that. Even in this board, we have that problem. That's why some of the members, not only the reasons they is being bandied around, which some of them are not factual, but if you look into the correspondence of those who have resigned there, it's different reasons. They complain about some of themselves, some of them inside there. So it's very important for me to be able to be a team player, to work with the collective, but not to compromise your credibility and your integrity in whatever you are doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Kalako. Yes, I am a strong personality. But in an environment like this, like other environments that I've served in, nationally, continentally, and internationally, there are egos that you've got to deal with, and some come with serious backgrounds and strengths, and you need to move the institution that you're part of forward, rather than do, like Honorable Ndlozi suggested, grandstand for yourself. This is a national asset which is depleting and deteriorating. We need to look at that as the priority. The mandate ought to be to do the turnaround with all the relevant players, including this portfolio committee and parliament, so that that broadcaster and its integrity can be restored. In doing so, of course, there needs to be vigorous engagement on the issues. And I will hold forth vigorously, but at the same time, if there's other intelligence on an issue, and often they are right, I give way. I may not be able to say very quickly, I'm sorry, but I will give way to superior intelligence. And ultimately, the collective view, if we can, through consensus, or go to a majority vote, prevail. If it becomes so onerous that it is impossible to do so, then one needs to move out of that environment. But the SABC, many people when they heard I'm shortlisted said, do you need this in your life? And actually I don't, but it is a challenge, and I do believe I'm up to the challenge. And in team situations, I excel.
Honorable members, we've come to the end of the session. I just want to thank the candidate. Thank you so much, Professor Cooper, for your time and availing yourself for this task. We really hope the robust discussion, you take it in the spirit of a sector or the strongest board we've ever had. And so we will keep you informed like all other candidates. I just wondered, although I doubt very much, whether there's any one question which we didn't ask, which you think might be asked as your name, if your name is suggested to the recommended to the National Assembly.
Thanks, Chair. I think all the relevant questions have been asked, including those discursive ones that are out there, and I trust I have attempted to at least provide a little bit of context so that this portfolio committee can reach whatever decisions it needs to make. But I would be really
off-put if the portfolio committee chooses a repetition of the past when clearly this is business unusual and you need the best candidates available who are willing to put themselves out there and take the flak for it. I will not feel disappointed because it actually can free me up for, I think, 3 to 5 years, depending on what the term is, to pursue other things, especially my memoirs, which I've just started.
Thank you very much.
Just hear me out. Just hear me out first, and then you can rule.
Yeah, but maybe do you want me to continue sharing?
No, I'm asking if you would allow me.
I have said no now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can you please, if you can take the candidate out. Thank you very much for your time.